The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
In St. Louis, he's been there for a couple of days and finally gets to work it tonight. The Blues desperately needing a win at home to Chicago. Pierre McGuire, how you doing?
I'm well, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. So what did you make of that moment last night? I think a lot of people were wondering, heading towards the final clean out of the lockers and meeting the media, that somebody would end up asking Carey Price, in light of everything that went down here and some of the criticism and some of the crap of digging into his personal life and all of that stuff, that would he really want to continue to play here? And I think we got the answer last night.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, that's one of the things that people don't understand. Hockey players are not really fair weather fans. They're in it to win it. And the way they get to the NHL is because they build up. No, they're not all like that. But I would say somebody like Carey Price, who is a first-round pick, who at the World Under 18 had a really tough time in his draft year, rebounded and was a first-round pick, played very well, didn't make the 2010 Olympic team, makes a 2014 Olympic team. He's been on the bench going to an Eastern Conference final in 2010. I mean, there's so many things he's had a battle through. This is what I think fans don't realize. Guys make it to the NHL because they have talent. Guys last in the NHL because they have talent and they have thick skin. The best players, I'm just telling you straight up, and Mitch, you can speak about it in baseball better than I can, but I'm telling you in hockey, the best players have the thickest skin. And they don't take a lot of stuff personally. They do on the ice, but they don't when it comes to media stuff. Most, not all, but most don't pay attention to it. They don't.
Well, I think in this instance, however, you know, from there's been a lot of there's been a lot of buildup. Most of it good, some of it really rotten. Between Carey Price and the fan base here in Montreal, from booing him at an exhibition game after Yaroslav Halak was traded, and he's sitting there, he's forcing to tell people basically to chill out. It's an exhibition game, right? Then he goes on to have the kind of season that he had, and this year he stopped saluting the fans at center ice. Everybody made a big deal out of after the game, specifically because of some reports that were out there. But right. So I think a lot of fans wondered. Forget his on-ice performance, which hasn't been good, and you know, coupled with a team that doesn't look good in front of him, with some of that baggage, would he still want to lock himself in like he did when he did a year ago? And the answer is yes.
And that speaks to my point. These guys, they may get angry, but they know how to brush it off. That's what makes them what they are. There's not a lot of people that can do it. He's one that can. And you know, when you're going to Montreal, whether you're going to be a coach, a manager, a trainer, a player, it doesn't matter. When you're going to Montreal, you better know you're going to be scrutinized. And if you can't deal with the scrutiny, don't go. Just don't go. It's just, that's the way the market is. But if you deal with it, I mean, you're going to be fine. That's part of the deal when you go there. You know, it's interesting. I'll just take you to another goalie that left Montreal, Patrick Roy. I'm convinced to this day, even though that night with Detroit, the fans were giving him a rough time, you know, and he had the nice salute. Really, what he was mad at, I don't think, was he wasn't mad at the fans. He was mad at Mario.
Yeah, of course he was.
He was mad at Mario, and he was mad at Ron Corey. That's who he was mad at, and that's why he said, get me out of here right now. He wasn't mad at the fans, I'm convinced to this day. If it would have been handled differently... And I'm not blaming Mario because it was a totally different time, and Mario was, you know, young at it in terms of coaching. He had never really gone through it. So it's a different kind of pressure for him, too. But I would just say, if you were to ask Patrick, he would probably say, I could have dealt with the fan stuff. I couldn't deal with the other stuff.
Yeah, well,
that's why I had to get out.
He was embarrassed that night in his own rink.
Yeah. So what do you do if you have a player, and you're, this is what I said to you a couple weeks ago, about Price, because I do think he's going to be in that Hall of Fame discussion at some point. When you have a player like that, and Patrick obviously is in the Hall of Fame, but when you have a player like that, you have to make sure you think about long-term legacy. You have to. And if you don't, then you're remiss. I can tell you, the winningest coach of all time used to think about that. He wouldn't say it publicly. He wouldn't talk about it. But you protect players in those situations. You have to. I remember one night coaching in a game, And Tom Watt let Grant Fuhr in, I think, for 11 goals in Pittsburgh. 11 goals. That didn't go so well. I'm just telling you, it didn't go so well. You know, and eventually Grant moved on from Toronto, but that I remember that, just being on the bench going, oh, this isn't good. You got to get the guy out of there. You know, you got to try to, you got to sometimes protect the players, not only from themselves, but from, you know, what the other team's doing to them.
Pierre, we're approaching the 25th anniversary of the last Cup, not only by the Canadians, but in this country. And honestly, if you go back to 1993, I defy anybody to suggest going into any season since 1993, you looked at the Montreal Canadiens roster and said, this is a Stanley Cup championship caliber team. Not one. I don't think. Not one.
The 93 team or this team?
No, since the 93 team.
Oh. No.
Any team in 25 years.
Yeah.
Not one.
2010 was a mirage. 2010 was Jaro Halak, and it was a mirage. It really was. But you can't take anything away from the team. They did it. They're the ones that got there. They did a great job. They really did. And Jaro was superior. He really was. They had no right beating Washington in the first round. Go look at the Game 7. Did Montreal win with 14 or 16 shots on goal in Washington in Game 7? It was ridiculous how they won games. But they did it, and Jaro was a big part of it. The 93 team, though, I can speak to it because I coached against them. This was a team that had a superior goalie, just like the 2010 team. They had a defenseman in Eric Desjardins that did something that no other defenseman ever did. He scored a hat trick in a Stanley Cup final for the Montreal Canadiens, and he had a great playoff. And they had guys like John LeClair, and they had guys that understood their roles, Kevin Haller, just guys that really cared about competing, and they were proud to wear the sweater. And so they came together at the right time. But the guy that kept it together was Jacques. Jacques Demers, Senator Demers, did a phenomenal job with that team. I coached against him, I can tell you. He did a great, great, great job with that group. And, you know, that happens. That matters a lot in that kind of stuff.
They also had five centers. And a couple of other guys on the blue line before when they did. Before we move off there, J.J. Daniel played the best hockey of his life in the final against Gretzky and the Kings. And there's a guy who's having a tough time right now. It's hard to get information, but I was really sad to hear about Lyle Odelein, who's not yet 50. Mm. His family asking for thoughts and prayers. Do you know any? Do you know anything?
I don't. And you know what's interesting? 2 weeks ago, Saturday, I had dinner with Mark Recchi in Pittsburgh. I was doing their game the next day against Philadelphia, and I was trying to help Mark and his son in terms of different educational opportunities. So I met with them for dinner, and the name never really came up except to say that he was living in Pittsburgh. And that's the first I had heard that with Lyle. Yeah. You know what? You know how much I'm in Pittsburgh, and I had never heard he was living there. So that's the first I'd ever heard of it. We were just reminiscing over different players from Montreal and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and different Hartford, different places we had both been. And that's the first I'd ever heard he was living in Pittsburgh.
Incredibly.
It was sad. It's a sad story.
Incredibly popular.
Except what I read.
Yeah. Popular guy, popular teammate. We wish, obviously, Lyle Odelein the best without knowing any more than that.
Here come the Jets. Ross Levick, he'll leave it. Connor back to the blue line. Bufflin over one-timer. Line A shoots and scores.
Oh.
Did he rip that glove side off the inside of the post? He has 44, and that rocket makes it 1-0 Jets.
So, Pierre, even with five regulars out, Patrick Laine came into the game struggling by his standards a little bit. His only shot on goal of the night was a typical Laine shot. Carey Price said afterwards he couldn't get set. He's not used to seeing that.
Yeah, that's his shot each up. It spins off his stick unbelievably quick. You know, there's a player the Canadians used to have that used to be able to shoot the puck like that. You know who it was? Vladdy Melnikov. Vladdy's shot would spin the same way, and it could eat goalies up. I talked to Olaf Kolzig about it once, and he says, the guy spins the puck off the blade of a stick, and it's hard to track it because of the way it flies through the air. And I think it's a lot of the same with Patrick Laine. But you're right. You know, Mike Bossy, if he's listening, Mike, I say this with total deference and respect, he was like that, too. He didn't need a ton of chances. Trotsky would get him the puck, or Gillies would get him the puck, and Mike could score from impossible angles or off the rush. He only needed to look at the net once or twice a game, and he would score. That's a gift. You know, you can teach guys to get in position, but you can't teach them to finish like that. You can teach them to shoot it hard. You can teach them to release the puck quicker. You can teach them all those things. But pure scorers are pure scorers. They just are, and Mike was one of those guys, like Patrick Laine is.
They've got so many different ways to generate offense. They've got the size. They can cycle. They can score off the rush. The quick release that we just talking about here. Points from defensemen as well, Pierre. That said, when it comes to the playoffs and every inch of the ice is contested and goal scoring is down by a goal to a goal and a half per game, do you think the Jets will be ready to win those kinds of games regularly?
We don't know. I don't know. You don't know, and they don't know. We're going to see. I think they've got a very good chance, though. I think they have a chance to really cause some mayhem. I really do, Rod. But, again, we don't know what Connor Hellebuck's going to do. We don't know how Dustin Byfuglien's going to play in his own zone, even though he's a Stanley Cup champion in 2010 with Chicago. We don't know how Blake Wheeler's going to play when he's getting total scrutiny in a playoff matchup kind of game plan situation. We don't know. Nobody knows. I tell you one thing. The chemistry with Scheifele and Wheeler is as good as any tandem in the league. It really is as good as any tandem in the league. So people are going to have to game plan that one if they're playing Winnipeg. And if you don't, then you're not going to beat them.
Yeah, Pierre, you mentioned Byfuglien, and he takes the penalty that led to the tying goal from the Canadians and then gets some misconduct. And yesterday we were talking to you about the Winnipeg Jets cutting down on their penalties. I'm just wondering, is he going to be able to control himself come playoff time?
Well, that's the key, and that's why I said he can refer back, and they can refer back to him, and if they're smart, they're going to do it, to what he did in the 2010 playoffs with Chicago, because he was really an important part of that. So was Andrew Ladd. I mean, so was Marian Hossa, but there were guys that aren't there anymore, Ladd being one of them, obviously Byfuglien being another one of them, that were really important to that team. They did a lot of dirty work. Johnny Madden was another one who's coaching right now. Those were the guys that really mattered. They were behind the scenes. They weren't Taves. They weren't Kane. They weren't Keith. They weren't Seabrook. But they were important guys. They were really, really important guys behind the scenes. So if you're Winnipeg, you got to get him to refer back to that, because that's the only reference point he has in terms of being close.
We'll get to Pierre's game in St. Louis. Huge for the Blues, obviously. I just want to go back one more time to pregame yesterday.
I don't think anybody should come in here next year thinking they got a job. I think it's going to be important that a lot of players come in here wanting to earn their job, because we need to get better. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're not good enough right now.
Claude Julien, that was specifically when after he announced that Jordy Benn would be a healthy scratch for the final home game. And Jordy Benn, Carl Alsner, and David Schlemko was back in the lineup last night. And I'm thinking, Wade Redden. Wade Redden was locked in, right? $6 million a year contract.
Yep.
In his 30s, he ended up spending two full years in the American Hockey League.
That's correct.
So I'm thinking Julien is...
The Rangers at that time were one of the only teams in the league that could afford it. Yes, that's true.
So, I mean, we're all trying to figure out, you know, how this team is going to get better next year. It's pretty obvious. I don't think guys in their 30s are going to get better. I think Price and Pacioretty and proven players can have better years, and they will have better years. But guys who are not star players are not going to get better in a fast league. They're not, right?
No, you're right. But do you remember what we talked about a while ago? This is going to have to be an awesome summer of player procurement for Marc Bergevin and the Canadiens, and they better have a plan. And the guys they think they can make better, they better have a short leash on them. There's got to be strength and conditioning coaches traveling around this summer, monitoring guys' progress. I would try to convince some players to stay around Montreal and train this summer, even though they don't have to do it. I would try to convince them at their exit meetings that that's something that's critically important, because you see them as having an opportunity to play. But there has to be some tinkering with this team. And if they don't have an awesome summer of player procurement, which I shared with you a while ago, it's not going to be much different. It's not. You know, I think it was Mike Boone who correctly talked about, and I was reading the Gazette this morning, about Juulsen, and he's right. He's a legitimate NHL player. And I told you, he was the best prospect the Canadiens had. Ryan Poehling is a good player, and he's a centerman, but he's not ready for this. He's not ready for this. So he's your next best prospect. So they've got work to do. They have a lot of work to do as a hockey organization.
I also think Claude Julien was sending a message to his general manager, because
He might, but
I'm reading too much. Maybe I'm trying to read his mind, but frankly, what he seems to be saying to me is, I can't make this defense work next season if the same group of players are here.
No, I understand that, but I would say with respect to Claude, who's been around, you know, obviously forever, and this is his second go-around in Montreal, he's smarter than that. I don't think you have to send veiled messages to your management team. I think the biggest thing is that's where you get together, whether it's on a golf course or at a restaurant or at someone's home for dinner, and you talk about your long-term strategy and your short-term strategy. And the manager hopefully says to the coach, okay, what do you need and what do we need to prioritize? And the coach says, if I don't have this or I don't have that, it's going to be difficult for us to improve. And you don't have to yell and scream at one another, but there has to be a meeting of the minds. And I believe they've had that discussion, just knowing Claude, and I respect him a ton. Mitch, I'm telling you, I know he's taken some slings and arrows from some of the people in Montreal. I'm just telling you right now, he's not a good coach. He's a tremendous coach. He's really good. You can ask Patrice, if you don't believe me, ask Patrice Bergeron, ask Zdeno Chara, ask Brad Marchand, ask Mark Recchi, ask the guys who were part of the 2011 Stanley Cup winning team and see what they say about Claude. And he's not an outdated guy at all. He's more than fine. He's more than fine. He just doesn't have a lot of players to work with. That's part of the problem.
You know what? What we do this year is going to pay off moving forward. So it's not just about saying, well, I need to work with young players. I think we have some good young players that have a good future here. And the more we teach them now, the less we have to teach them next year. And the more experience they're getting now, the less we'll have to worry about that.
All right, that was before leaving for Detroit today. So let's get to your game and the importance of the St. Louis Blues and taking on a team in Chicago that was eliminated a while ago. But do you sense something dramatic going down in Chicago in the offseason?
Everybody's saying that. So my mind is probably poisoned because I hear everybody saying that. But I know the people in Chicago pretty well. I haven't heard that from them. You got to remember what Joel Quenneville's contract is. It's gigantic. It's not a little bit big. It's very big. I could see some fine-tuning done with their group. I could see some fine-tuning maybe being done on the coaching staff. I could see potentially some fine-tuning being done at the management level. I can't see Stan Bowman being replaced. I'd be shocked if Joel were. And if he is, he won't be unemployed for very long. So I hear all the same stuff you probably read or hear, but I just have a hard time believing it. I really do.
All right, the Blues.
Have a hard time. They're not. I'll tell you this. They're a little like Montreal. They're not good enough right now. And their best players, Duncan Keith, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, need a rest, and they're going to get one. And they need Marian Hossa back. Somehow, some way, they need to get Marian Hossa back. It's a huge void in their lineup.
St. Louis making up the game in hand they have on Colorado with 1 point behind Colorado, so that sets it up nicely for tonight.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's on the table. Now, for St. Louis, this is their schedule. Home versus Chicago, at Colorado. If you take care of business, you're in, if you're St. Louis. If you're counting on somebody else, like San Jose, to take care of your business, you're in trouble. And Colorado plays in San Jose tomorrow night. They're 0-2 on our trip to California so far. If you're St. Louis, you can't be counting on that. You got to take care of your own business, and it starts tonight. Here's the difference. When I watched St. Louis skate this morning, I've been out here a ton since the Olympics have been over. This is the first time I saw them have all hands on deck for the morning skate. They're taking this like it's an opening of a playoff series. That's very apparent. And you go in their dressing room, you talk to their players after the morning skate, very apparent. It's an intense environment. They know they let it down the other night. They did not compete hard enough at key times in their game against Washington.
8 o'clock tonight. Thanks as always, Pierre. We'll talk tomorrow prior to the Habs and Wings in Detroit.
Just one great thought on Lyle Odline.
Yes, please.
Lyle Odline has the most points ever by a defenseman in one game for the Montreal Canadiens. And that was against the Hartford Whalers in 1994. It was the coach's fault from Hartford.
Wow. More points than Doug Harvey.
Yeah, more than Doug Harvey, more than Larry Robinson, more than or J.C. Tremblay, more than any other Canadiens defenseman in history in that one game.
How many goals did they score on you guys that night?
I think it was 7. Odie had 5. I think Odie had 5 points. You'd have to look it up, Rod. But I think Odie had 5 points in that game.
Nah, he had more than 5. Come on, Doug Harvey had a game with more than 4 points.
Well, then it was 6. No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 6 points. I bet you they scored 10. I bet you they scored 10, Pierre,
no,
but you've erased it from
10.
Your memory.
They didn't score 10. Rod, get the score. I'm not hanging up till you get it, Rod. 94.
Yeah. Lyle Odoline, team record for most points in a game.
I need to prove that they didn't score 10.
Well, I'm figuring if Odoline got 6 points, they came pretty close to 10 goals.
On every goal, I'm telling you. It was unbelievable that night. I was so mad.
So it was February 2nd, 94, and Lyle Odoline had 5 assists.
And a goal?
He had 5 assists, which tied a club record with Doug Harvey.
There you go.
So they share the Canadiens' record for most points in a game by a defenseman.
That's the actual, not most assists in a game. It's most points.
Odoline had no goals, 5 assists.
And what was the score of the game?
9-2.
Ha ha ha!
It wasn't 10.
You were looking at the score upside down. You were so upset.
Oh, was I angry? And you know what? You know, this is just a little quick story. Now you got to go. I told our trainers, I said, Bud, saying the stuff up because we're going to be back here in like 4 hours. We had to fly to Winnipeg. So go if you look at the rest of the record there on that trip, Rod, I remember it clear as day. We practiced at 6:30 in the morning at the Forum. We took a commercial flight right after practice. I'm not kidding you, to Winnipeg. We won in Winnipeg. We lost in overtime in Calgary. We won in Vancouver. Jimmy Sanlak and Robert Kron had huge games going home, and then we won in Edmonton. And we won in Quebec the night before we lost to Montreal. Check that road trip out. I'm not kidding you. I remember like it was yesterday. I was so proud of the players. I was so mad. I said, we're skating tomorrow morning. So we did.
Well, I don't have the record for the rest of the road trip here, but I'm reading the Gazette's game story that was published the next morning.
Is there a quote from Pierre?
I was angry. There's a bad quote.
By the way, the game story written by Herb Zekowski.
Uh-huh.
So this was published February 3rd, 94, the next morning. Okay, Whalers coach Pierre Maguire, who was raised in Montreal, didn't see any special significance in being pasted at the Forum. It was his first game coaching in the building.
Oh, no.
This isn't to suggest Maguire was pleased with what transpired, however. Quote, they are the defending Stanley Cup champs. If we can't muster a better effort, they should check the mirror. How much pride can they have? End quote.
Yeah, well, we practiced early in the morning. And we had lots of pride the rest of the trip. It was awesome.
Yeah, you can't say that when you're a 22-year-old head coach or whatever
22.
You were.
22. I wish I was 22.
Have a good night in St. Louis.
I will. Thank you.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. ShipEnergy.com.
And remember, you qualify for the employee's discount of $13,000.